Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries daily, worldwide, over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on business principles when we come back. Well, Joe Smith started the day early, having set his alarm clock made in Japan for 6 a.m. Now, while his coffee pot made in Japan is perking, he puts his blow dryer made in Taiwan to work, and then he shaves with his electric razor made in Hong Kong. He puts on a dress shirt made in Taiwan, his designer jeans made in Singapore, and a pair of tennis shoes made in Korea. Then after cooking up some breakfast in his new electric skillet made in the Philippines, he sits down to figure out on his calculator made in Mexico how much he can spend today. Then after setting his watch made in Switzerland to the radio made in Hong Kong, he goes out, gets in his car made in Germany, and he goes looking, as he has for many months, for a good-paying American job. After the end of another discouraging and fruitless day, Joe decides to relax for a while. So he puts on a pair of sandals made in Brazil, pours himself a glass of wine made in France, and then he turns on his TV made in Japan and ponders again why it is that he cannot find a good-paying American job. Now, instead of a good-paying American job, why doesn't Joe look for a good-paying American private business dealing in property instead of income? Now, if you'd like to tap into the power of private business, then why don't you call and order our free general law CD package first? That's the place to start. Doesn't cost you anything. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. And it's informative, and it's entertaining, it's educational, it's free. And you can call and order one right now. The number's 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. Click onto the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. That's georgegordon.org. Go to the archives page. All right, we're talking about business principles. Principles of business. Rather than, you know, do A, B, C, and D, and then you'll make $1 million. I see those on TV every once in a while. If you'll write for this guy's book, he'll tell you how to buy real estate for no money down. And then I don't know what you do. I didn't read the book. But anyway, whatever it is you do makes you rich. You get real rich off of that. Well, it would seem like to me that the people that have that real estate that you're going to buy for no money down, they've already got it for no money down. It would seem like to me that if this was such a surefire program, then those people that are already in possession of the property and probably have some kind of equity in it would be in a better position to profit off of it than you, because you're going to take it leveraged out to the moon, aren't you? No money down. Paying interest. Aren't you going to be paying some interest on the note? And don't businesses that borrow money go bankrupt most often, 90% of them in the first year? And this guy says, well, what you need to do to get rich is to borrow a lot of money, leverage yourself out to the moon, and to pay no money down, pay all this interest and usury, and you'll get rich. Now, you know, I'm just an old country farmer, and I'm probably dumb as a box of rocks, but I tested that years ago, and it didn't work for me. You know, I bought Nickerson's book, and I read it. I know about Aunt Toby's. So I wouldn't want to tell you not to do that. You know, after all, that's you're an adult, and you should be able to figure out whether that's a good plan or a bad one. But using my old archaic biblical philosophy of there's safety in a multitude of counsel, you know, I've talked to other guys, how did it work for you, and they all told me the same thing. They lost their ass doing the same thing I did. So I could tell you of a number of people that tried that and didn't work for them. That doesn't mean that it doesn't work. Gambling works. I mean, hell, there's people, you know, that go in, they gamble, and they make money. I tested it. It didn't work for me, so I'm not advocating gambling, and I'm not advocating that you buy real estate for no money down and so on. I think that hard work, a business plan, and a diligent exercise of the plan will yield you some benefit. If you work geometrically instead of arithmetically, I think that'll be of some benefit to you. I think if you knew the rule of 72 and how it applies and how geometric progression applies and how it works, I think that would be of some benefit to you. But mainly, I try to tell my students when they come in the door, you know, what we need to do is to teach you how to think. And once we teach you how to think, then you don't need me to tell you what's good for you. When somebody comes to me and says, you know, what you need is national health care insurance because you're uninsured, and I'm one of those 44 million Americans that doesn't have any health care insurance. Yep, I'm one of them. I don't deny it. And my president comes to me and he says that I need this health care insurance program. So I got to thinking about that a little bit, and my conclusion is I don't need it and I don't want it. But he said that it's so important that he wants to put me in jail if I don't buy it. Sounded kind of like coercion to me, threat, duress. And I thought, you know, what if I came to you and I said, I think you need my law school, and if you don't buy it, I'm going to fine you, I'm going to coerce you, I'm going to throw you in jail, I'm going to beat up on you and wreck your car. What would you think of that? Well, if you think that my threatening you to get you to buy my school is something wrong, can you tell me why it is that when government threatens you, that it makes it right? If the mafia threatened you, you'd say that was wrong. But when the government threatens you, that's okay? Is that what I'm hearing here? So my conclusion is that if government is going to threaten and coerce me, then that's wrong. Even if they are smarter than I am. Hell, I don't deny it. The president of the United States, to become president, he had to be a pretty smart guy. He was smarter than Hillary Clinton, and she's not a dummy. And I'm not president of the United States, so you can see how dumb I am. So I'm not even in the game, and I don't claim to be. But I am smart enough to know that these guys are threatening me, and I don't like that, and so I decided that I'm not going to participate, as dumb as I am. Let me tell you a little story over here, because a guy came in the other day, and he said, well, what would you do if you had a major medical need and you don't have health care insurance? And I said, I'm glad you asked me that, because a few years ago, we had a major medical need here. My son, Dirk, got run over when he was 10 years old, and it damaged his hip, the joint where that socket fits into your hip joint. It damaged it. And over the years, as he grew up, and he's an adult, he's in his 40s now, that damaged hip socket from that accident got to working, and finally it got to the point where he couldn't walk anymore. Now, that's pretty serious. And so he went to the doctor, and the doctor says, you need a hip replacement surgery, and that's $30,000. Now, you see, most of you people out there, if you needed hip replacement surgery for $30,000, so you'd say, well, I need health insurance. And that's what people have been told for years and years, they need health insurance. Now, health insurance in this country costs about $12,000 a year. You know, some a little more, some a little less, but $12,000 a year. Now, that's quite a bit of money. That's $1,000 a month. So here's what I did. I took $1,000 a month and I put it into a coffee can. And if you would have started, let's just pick a date, you know, 2005. You know, you can start today if you want, but just go back in time to 2005. In the year 2005, we didn't have any medical needs at all. So at the end of the year, we had $12,000 in the can. And so then the next year came along, 2006, and we didn't have any medical needs at all, so we didn't take anything out of the can. So now we got $24,000 in the can. And then 2007 came along, and that was the year that we had the medical need. But we put $12,000 in the can, so that's $36,000 in the can. Now we need $30,000 to pay for this hip replacement surgery. So my wife went in and did the negotiations, and she said to the doctor, now we can fly to India, have the surgery done in India for $8,000 over a period of 6 weeks. And the doctor said, well, how do you plan to pay? Because if you go to India, you'll have to pay cash. And my wife said, we have enough money in our can that we can fly to India, pay cash for the tickets, stay there for 6 weeks and pay cash at the Holiday Inn, go to the hospital, pay cash, and then we have enough money to get home on a round-trip ticket. And it won't cost $30,000, it'll only cost about 10 or 12 maybe. So the doctor said, you know, I think we could probably, for cash, do the surgery for $7,000. And I think that for cash, I think you could pay the anesthesiologist $1,400. And for cash, I think you could pay the hospital for 2 days in the hospital, and it would probably cost you around $10,000, and that'd be the end of it. And so then we thought, would we rather pay $8,000 plus airplane fare in 6 weeks to go to India, or would we rather pay $10,000 here locally? And we figured $10,000 cash locally would do it. Now listen, boys and girls, health insurance is very profitable for Blue Shield Blue Cross, and it's just as profitable for us. Just as profitable, because that's what they're doing. See, they're taking your premiums and they're putting it in a pile someplace. Actually, they invest it in other kind of neat deals to make money with. They take your money to make money. And then when you have one of these surgeries, then they won't pay for it. Yeah, they do everything they can to screw you out of the money. Just ask anybody that's ever had a major insurance claim. Were you happy and satisfied with the service and the product that you bought from the health insurance company? I've never talked to a satisfied claimant yet. I'm an old man. I've never talked to one. If you know of somebody that ever had a good experience with a health insurance company on a major claim, that's $10,000 or more, have them call me, would you? I'd like to talk to a happy, satisfied customer. So I figured that if health insurance was a good program for the health insurance industry, it's probably just as good of an investment for Joe Sixpack and Sally Housewife. It's called self-insurance. So that's what I did. Now, if you could go 10 years, now let's just take you're a young man and you're 30 years old and you're working for some, you know, FedEx, let's say, or maybe you're working for Big Brown, and you've got this health care insurance and so on. Why don't you, instead of that, take $1,000 a month and put it in your coffee can and do that for 10 years. From the time you're 30 to 40, I mean, you're going to have $120,000 in your can. I mean, that'll pay for a bypass surgery cash for $100,000. And do you know you can have a $100,000 bypass surgery done in India for $20,000, one-fifth the price? I'll bet you if you told your surgeon that you were going to pay cash and $100 bills and you don't need a receipt, I'll bet you he could do it for $20,000 right here at your local hospital. At least that was my experience. So why don't you test that and see if I'm right. Now, last time, remember, we were talking about everybody as a consumer, but only a few consumers are producers. That was number 75. Now, number 76 of my business principles here. Now, if you do business with a producer, prosperity will follow. But if you do business with a consumer, then poverty will be your reward. Isn't that a wise old saying? So when I do business with people, I try to avoid people that are consumers. When I see people that are in debt, paying mortgage payments on their houses, and they've got new cars, but they're making payments on their cars, and then they want to do business with me, I don't do business with them, but I want to pay cash. And when I see somebody that's got his house and it's free and clear, and he's got a car, it's maybe an older car, but it's free and clear, and the guy's got a little cash in his pocket, that's the guy I want to do business with. Because from my experience, I have learned that when you do business with a producer, a guy that's out hustling a buck, he's out working every day, that's the guy you want to do business with. That's a producer. Now, if you've got some guy over here that's a consumer, you know, he likes to have a box seat at the Kansas City Royals games, you know, and he spends money, you know, on frivolous things. He works, you know, 8 to 5, and does what he has to do. That's an unprofitable servant, and I don't do business with people like that. Now, number 77, a rich man's needs are few, and he has much money with which to pay. So another thing that I observed over the years was when you're doing business with people that have money, you don't need to worry about getting paid. He doesn't have a lot of needs. He's got the money to pay you. But number 78, a poor man's needs are many and endless, and he has no means with which to satisfy them. So as a contractor, I noticed early on that when I went out to do business and wanted to make a bid, some guy would call me, and he's living over here in a pretty marginal neighborhood. He's got a need for a new kitchen. He's got a need for a new bathroom. I can see his need. It needs to be remodeled. But he's struggling for $7,000, you know, to remodel his bathroom. He's struggling. And he's trying to Jew me down on every faucet, everything in there. Now, you go up in the Berkeley Hills, and you're going to do business with a Jewish real estate broker, Mort Friedkin. I always remember Mort when I think of this. This guy, Mort Friedkin, you know, he's got all the money in the world. And then he said, hey, Gordon, I want you to go up there and look at my house and tell me what you think. And then I said, well, I can put in a fair to middling bathroom here for you for around, I think it was $14,000. And he said, what kind of flooring do you think you'd put under? And I said, well, I think I'd put solarium linoleum. And he said, I want tile. I said, well, that's fine. I can put in a tile floor, but of course a tile floor is going to cost you about $3,500. And he said, what kind of a base are you going to put in underneath the tile floor? I said, well, I would recommend at least plywood, but if you really want to do a good job, you need to put in a cement base. He said, I want a cement base in there. I said, well, then that's going to cost you about $4,500. He said, that's what I wanted. When we got all through, you know, talking about the numbers over here, you know, his bathroom remodel back in the early 70s, it was about $18,000+. And you know, when I finished the job, he just wrote me the check, and that was the end of the argument. And it taught me a valuable lesson. A rich man's needs are few, and he has much with which to pay, but a poor man's needs are many and endless, and he has no means with which to satisfy them. So when working with wealthy people, I don't need to pinch pennies. What they want is the best, and they want the best that money can buy, with the best workmanship and the best quality, which is really the cheapest in the end. This is the guy that's going to put in a tile floor with a concrete base. That's the best. It's the strongest. The tile won't crack. The guy paid an extra $1,000 for the concrete base, but that's exactly correct. Because, you know, plywood is the way to cut costs, but it's not the best quality. And then the tile's going to crack, and then you got to replace it, and pretty soon you get dissatisfied, and so on down the line. So tuck it away in your heart. Number 79, business is for rich men, charity is for the poor. See how simple that is? Nothing against you poor people out there. I've been poor for all my life, but when I want to do business with somebody, I want to do business with the rich men, not for the poor. Charity for the poor, business for the rich. Now, number 80, a wise man deals in property, a fool deals in commercial paper. Now, here in America, everybody wants commercial paper. They want Federal Reserve note dollars and credit cards and credit. You know, hey, do you take MasterCard and Visa and one thing and another? No, I don't take paper. In fact, people are kind of shocked, you know. I say, well, what's the price of your school? And they tell them it's 4.5 ounces of gold. And they said, well, how much is 4.5 ounces of gold worth? About $225. Oh, well, I'll just send you a check for $225. No, just send me the 4.5 ounces of gold. Then when they go down to the gold broker to buy the gold, they gasp. They call back in dismay, and they say, oh, my God, the price of gold is $1,200 an ounce. I say, yeah, but see, the price of my school hasn't gone up from 1950 to today. I'm still charging the same $225. The problem that you're having here, boys and girls, is that the value of your paper money has gone to hell. That's what the problem is. The value of my gold hasn't gone up. The value of your paper money has gone down. See, there isn't any more gold in the world today than there was in 1950, but there's a lot more paper dollars out there, and they're printing more every day. I just saw Ben Bernanke the other day. He said, we have a secret weapon called the printing press. You got that right. Boy, he's got a secret weapon out there. He's going to print you people into prosperity. I think I'll sit on the sidelines and watch all you people get rich. That's going to be my program. I'm going to sit on the sidelines, and I'm not going to participate in national health care insurance, and I'm not going to participate in your inflation and hyperinflation and your banks and credit cards and credit debt usury. I think I'll just sit on the sidelines, poor as I am, and watch all you people get filthy rich, and then I can be real jealous of you. Okay? Now, number 81 is a good one. It says, the poor speak endlessly of riches, and they are impoverished thereby. But the rich speak endlessly of work, and they are increased thereby. You ever notice that? You're talking to some ne'er-do-well over here, and he's talking about all these pie-in-the-sky schemes that he's got for making money and getting rich. He's going to invest in this and that and another thing and make a killing. People that actually have money, like this Mort Friedkin that I'm telling you about, you know, he worked hard, and he sold a lot of real estate, and he never talked about pie-in-the-sky. He was always talking about work and buying and selling and trading and buying this house and remodeling, and I remodeled a lot of houses for him. And I happened to do his house, but I did other houses for him, apartments. And he never talked about getting rich. He just talked about work. And I noticed he had a lot of wealth. Then I noticed that he was making a lot of wealth. And so my observation says that the poor speak endlessly of riches. They're just talking about all these deals they're going to make, pie in the sky. And they're impoverished by this. The rich man, he just talks about work, getting out there and hustling a buck. And then in the end, he's increased thereby. Now, number 82, gold is the currency of kings. Silver is the currency of gentlemen. Barter is the currency of peasants. And debt is the currency of slaves. And when I first heard that, I said, well, I've never heard a story like that before. What do you mean gold is the currency of kings? Well, he who has the gold makes the rules. Sounds like sovereignty to me. Sovereignty is a incident to making law. Gold is the currency of kings, and silver is the currency of gentlemen. Barter is the currency of peasants, and debt is the currency of slaves, and Americans have a lot of debt. $100 trillion worth of debt. I took a look at that, and I said, you know, every taxpaying citizen of America has an obligation called joint and several liability. Now, I don't have $100 trillion with which to pay that debt off, and so there's no point for you people out there waiting for little Georgie Gordon to go out there and do that for you, because I'm just going to be right up front with you and tell you I ain't got that kind of money. And I kind of doubted that anybody else in the country, including guys like Bill Gates and Warren Buffett, and I don't think they got $100 trillion either. So I said to myself, I think I want to opt out of this program. And I did. I opted out. And I've been teaching people how to do that. Now, card-carrying dedicated communists don't want to opt out, and I'm not here to suggest that you opt out either, because I don't know what's good for you. But I took a look at it, and I said, I don't think $100 trillion worth of debt is good for me, and especially this joint and several liability trick. I didn't like that one at all. So I thought, I think what I'll do is I'm going to opt out of this program and leave it for the other 299,999,999 Americans, and little Georgie just going to drop out and leave the $100 trillion worth of debt to the other 300 million Americans, short one. Just lop me off. And I'm going to deal in gold and silver, and I'm going to deal in a little barter, and I'm going to avoid the currency of slaves, which is debt. And as a result of that, I've been very happy with that decision. I did that 26 years ago, 1985, I believe it was. Is that right? 84. Did it in 84. 94, 104. Yep, 26 years. And I've been very happy with that decision, and that's what we teach here at the law school. And so we don't insist that you do it. A lot of people go to school here, and they don't follow the plan. They don't follow this program. I told you yesterday or day before, I told you about a guy out in California. He had a $500,000 house in 2006. He still has the house today, but now it's a $300,000 house. He hasn't lost anything yet. He still has the house. He would have had more had he sold the house earlier on. But that's not a loss, because he owns it free and clear. He's not making payments on it. So he doesn't have anything to be ashamed of. He hadn't lost anything. Now, if he sells the house today and turns that into gold, I think that the price of gold will double before the price of that property doubles. In fact, over the next 5 years, my bet would be that the value of that property will drop from $300,000 to $150,000, and that the value of the gold will go up from $300,000 to $600,000. That'd be my bet. So I would recommend, if I was doing this, if he was to ask me for counsel, I would say, I think I'd sell the house, take the money, convert it to gold. In fact, I'd do better than that. I think I'd convert it to silver, because I think I could make four times that. I think I could make the $200,000 that I didn't make, I think I could make that back dealing in silver. So anyway, that's what gold and silver does for you. It's the currency that God in the Bible, Leviticus 19:35 and 36, told us to use. And I think he gave us some pretty good advice. My experience, testing it over 26 years, has shown me conclusively that dealing in gold and silver produces greater profit than credit cards, debt, usury, and paper money. I know. You've always used debt and usury and credit money, and it has produced you everything you have. But if you thought that maybe you'd have more, you know, like the man in California, it is true he's still wealthy. He still has a $300,000 house. I mean, he's not poor. But he would be wealthier if he had gotten rid of the house, you know, 3 or 4 years ago or five, and then converted it into something else, he would have even more. Not that he's short of anything today, but, you know. And that's the purpose behind business. Business is where we count our profits to keep score. I'm not poor, and I'm not missing any meals, and I'm not hungry, but I would like to make $1 million before I die. And in order for me to do that, I got to get busy and go out and hustle. If I were to retire on Social Security, see, I would miss out on my opportunity to make $1 million. So that's why I didn't retire, and I'm not on Social Security, and I'm out here hustling the buck every day because I want to make $1 million. Somebody said to me the other day, what are you going to do with $1 million? I'm going to put it in a pile of gold over here and count it because I scored. What in the hell were you going to do with your Social Security check? Well, I was going to spend it on gasoline and burn it up in my motorhome driving around in my golden years, seeing America. Well, you know, to each his own, you know, whatever turns you on, get with it. Number 83, never put your money in the bank. I heard that when I was a kid. Yeah, never put your money in the bank. Well, there's a good reason for that. See, first of all, the banks are a criminal enterprise. They won't take your gold and silver in the bank. They don't deal in gold and silver. They only deal in paper. That's a criminal enterprise because it violates Leviticus 19:35 and 36. And then when you put your money in the bank, like let's say you got $1,000 in the bank today, they're going to pay you something on the order of 2%, maybe, 2% interest. They're going to lend your money out for maybe 6, 7, 8%. So they're going to make more money than you do off of your money. But you're going to lose on inflation because, you see, the purchasing power of your $1,000 today will buy 1,000 loaves of hillbilly bread, but next year they're only going to buy, oh, around 10% less than that, maybe 900, 920, maybe 930 loaves of hillbilly bread. So you're going to lose, you know, 70 loaves of bread while you're collecting this interest, which is maybe worth 30 loaves of bread. See where you're going with this? The banks have never been a good place to put your money. I know you learned how to do that. I did in the third grade. I put my money in Bank of America. I got 2.5% interest. It was a bad investment then, and it's a worse investment now. So I just thought I'd pass that on to you. It didn't work when I tried it, and then it probably isn't going to work any better for you. Hey, we're at the halfway point here. Let me remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and the law hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the law hour website is updated weekly, and it has a radio log schedule and archives. All of it can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these law hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the law hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Then click onto the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right now, right this minute. The sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements, these recommendations that we give, don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review either. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about business principles, things that I've learned over the years and watched other people do, pulled out of the Bible in some cases. Some cases I pulled it right off of Henry Kaiser's concrete trucks. You know, there's all kinds of people out there that have made money over the years, done business, and been very successful at it. And sometimes they give you a little clue. You know, they'll tell you, hey, a little bit of here, a little bit of there, and you learn, you pick this up. And so I wrote them out. I got 150 of them here, and we're on number 84. Never buy anything that you cannot take possession of. When you buy something and you fail to take possession, let's just take gold right now as in the marketplace. And a lot of people, see, they buy gold, and they actually don't take delivery of the gold. They have a piece of paper that says that they have gold in a warehouse. And then they have to pay insurance and storage on the gold that they have in the warehouse. Well, now let's take the Linden Metal Exchange or the COMEX, for instance. They've got two big warehouses. And there's a real question in the minds of a lot of people as to whether or not they've got an ounce of gold in the warehouse for every ounce of gold that they have out on contracts that they've sold to people. Now, I know it kind of calls into question the honesty of these people, and I don't want to do that, because we presume that if you've got a contract for 100 ounces of gold, that the warehouse must have your 100 ounces of gold in there, and indeed they do have 100. But there was a big guy, and I don't know how big this guy was, but it was reported in the International Forecaster, and he went up to the Bank of Nova Scotia. Now, the Bank of Nova Scotia is up in Canada, and it's a bank that deals in a lot of gold. And this heavy hitter, they call him heavy hitters, I'm going to guess that he was probably an Arab sheik, you know, maybe the king of Saudi Arabia. And I don't know how much money this guy's got in the Bank of Nova Scotia, but anyway, he wanted to go up and look at the warehouse that had his gold in it. And so they said, well, come on up. We'll open the warehouse, and because you're a heavy hitter, we'll let you come in and take a look. So whoever this guy was, heavy hitter, I don't know if it was Warren Buffett or somebody else, but, you know, they call him heavy hitter. He goes up to the Bank of Nova Scotia, walks into the warehouse, and he says, well, how much gold is in here? And they said, well, you know, 3,800,000 ounces or whatever. And he looks around and he says, well, I have more than that on deposit in this warehouse. See, I've got 6 million ounces. And he asked him, he says, is this all you got? And they said, yeah, this is the warehouse. This is all we got. Now, boys and girls, gold, for instance, has been sold in future deliveries on paper. They call it paper gold. And 82% of all the gold transactions made in the world are done on paper. 18% are done physically. And I'm one of the physical guys. If I buy an ounce of gold, I take it and I put it in my pocket. So all of you people out there that haven't taken possession of your gold and silver, or you don't have possession of the goods, you know, the commodities, well, join the club, because it isn't out there. It has been sold 15 years into the future. So if you want your gold today, you need to take possession of it today. And so that's just a business principle. You never buy anything that you don't take possession of. So when I buy my 1960 Ford six-cylinder pickup, I'm going to take possession of it. Number 85. When you buy Blue Sky, you get what you pay for. Blue Sky is a term that we use in business. Like, you're going to buy a business and you're going to pay this guy $100,000, but when you inventory the inventory, there's only $10,000 worth of inventory, and then you inventory the lease, you know, maybe it's worth another $10,000, and you know, the balance of that, you know, goodwill and accounts receivable and accounts payable, and you know, that's what we call Blue Sky. So tuck that one away in your heart. You get what you pay for when you buy Blue Sky. 86. In the world of business, there are at least three business boys for every businessman. Now, a business boy is a guy that runs around and pretends that he's a businessman, but he doesn't follow these kinds of business principles. So when I'm talking to somebody, then he tells me about his apartment houses and about this, that, and another thing that he's got, that he's bought on time, and one thing and another, I don't say anything, you know, to somebody to hurt their feelings, but I'm thinking to myself, business boy. This is a business boy. This is not a businessman. Now, number 87, all men are motivated by vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear, so take advantage of it. Now remember, number 20, I said, you're motivated by vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear, and if you can't control it, you can rest assured that somebody else is going to control you by way of your five motivators. Has it ever occurred to you to motivate others by their five motivators for your benefit? And that's the way life is. These people, just like you, are motivated by your five motivators, vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear. So if you can't manage your vanity, you can rest assured that I'm going to do everything in my power to manage it for you, to my benefit. So wake up, smell the coffee here, boys and girls. Let's learn a lesson. Number 88. Now, after you ask the closing question, shut up. It's a business principle. It's a sales tool. He who speaks after the closing question has been asked loses. And after all, our objective here is to close the sale. Now, it's one thing to make a sale. It's something else, again, to close it. When people say the check is in the mail, that's not a closed sale. A closed sale is when the check is in the bank and it cleared last night. That is a closed sale. So when you ask the closing question, then shut up and let the customer close the sale and then collect the check. Number 89, if you try to make every deal that's offered to you, poverty is going to be your reward. It's what we call cherry picking in the trade. Now, my telephone rings many times a day and people are offering all kinds of deals, and we don't take every deal that comes by. We only take the deals that are going to benefit me, us. Why? I'm not in business to benefit you. I know, that's selfish, but I already told you, all business is selfish. That's why we have what's called the profit motive. Now, the monopolists and the bureaucrats will say, see, what did I tell you? See, this capitalistic free enterprise system is selfish. That's correct, and that's because that's the way we're designed. The creator of the universe designed us with vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear. And he said, let God be true, though every man be found a liar. So not only are you a vanity-filled, jealous, lustful, greedy, fearful little fellow, you're a liar on top of it. So I just wanted to point that out to you. I wouldn't have known that if God hadn't explained it to me, but he did. And so now that I know that, I say, oh, so that's the way the game's played. Well, in that case, then, here's the way we have to deal with it. So if you're trying to make every deal that somebody offers you over here, well, then poverty is going to be the end result of it. So I only take the deals that are going to benefit me. And, you know, if you've got something to sell or you got something you want to do or something in mind, that's terrific. But, you know, you can't make every deal with me. You got to go make a deal with one of the other 300 million Americans out there. Let's try number 90 over here. Debt is the mortal enemy of business. And what is it that everybody's offering you? The bank comes along and says, let's offer you debt. The college comes along and says, let's offer you debt. The government comes along and says, let's offer you debt. Worse than that, let's just put you into debt. We already got your power of attorney. That was what you did the last time you voted, remember? Now, you people voted for Barack Obama, Nancy Pelosi, and Harry Reid, but I noticed, according to the polls, that you're not happy or satisfied with the vote that you made in 2008, and you're thinking about making a change in 2010. I didn't make a mistake with my vote in 2008. I did not make a mistake with my vote in 2006, 4, 2, 0, 98, 96. I haven't made a mistake with my vote since 1982. That was the last year I voted. 1982. It was a mistake. That I made a mistake that year when I voted. But I didn't repeat it in 84, 86, or 88. Now, boys and girls, if voting was the solution to our problems, we wouldn't have any problems to start with, because we've been voting now for 230 years. Now, voting didn't solve your problem in 2008, and it's not likely that voting is going to solve your problem in 2010. There's a more constructive methodology to life than voting. Although, if that's what you want to do, get after it. I'm not here to tell you not to vote. But these politicians are selling a lot of debt. And debt is the mortal enemy of business. And I want to do business, because business is where I get more wealth, or I get to satisfy my needs and wants and desires. And I don't have any need, want, or desire for national health care insurance. I have no needs, wants, or desires to go to war with anybody in Afghanistan, Iraq, Iran, Russia, China, or anybody else. If you have some bitch with the Iranians and you want to go to war with them, that's fine. I don't want to get in the way of your happiness and success. I just wanted you to know up front that don't count on me. Don't count on me to help you in your war with Iran or Iraq or Afghanistan or anybody else, because I'm not interested in it. So I just thought I'd let you know that up front here. Always take your discounts. That's number 91. Number 91. Always take your discounts. It's very important because if you'll think about it for a minute, when you get to be 65, they give you a 10% senior discount. And then oftentimes, if you've got an account with somebody, they'll give you 2% net 10. Okay? Make sure you take that. Then there's oftentimes a credit card. If they're dealing in credit cards, then it costs the vendor 6%. So I tell them, do you take credit cards? And they say, yes, I do. And then I say, does that cost you 6% when I pay you with a credit card? And they say, yes, it does. Is that priced into your product? Yes, it is. Good. I'm going to pay you with $100 bills. So I want you to take 6% off. You charge sales tax here? Yes, we do. How much is it? 7%. I don't pay sales tax. I pay cash. I don't need a receipt. And I take all of my discounts. Now, let's see. I'm 10% senior. 2% net 10, 6% on the credit card, 7% on the sales tax. That 7 to 6 is 13, 15, 25. That's pretty good, 25% discount. All right, give me a 25% discount, and I'll pay you with $100 bills, or better yet, I'll pay you with gold or silver coin. I always tell people I'll pay them with gold coin. You'd be surprised. Sometimes people say, well, yeah, I'll take that gold coin. So always take your discounts. That's number 91. Now, number 92, buy low, sell high. I know, sounds kind of trite, but listen up here. Buy low, sell high. You make your profit when you buy, not when you sell. Now, that being the case, then we have to make our profit when we buy. So say you're going to buy a house, and you take a look at that house. You need to know what that house is going to sell for. That's why you call your real estate broker, and you have them say, well, now, if this house is this, that, and another, and I go to sell this, what do you think you're going to get for that? And they'll tell you. No, in a ballpark way. Here's about what that thing's going to sell for. Then you sit down and you figure out, what's it going to cost me to fix this place up? Then you put those numbers together and you crunch them, add to 20%, because it always costs you more than you figured on, and then that'll tell you what to offer for the house. See how that goes? Or the car, or whatever it is you're going to deal in. Now, debt is the mortal enemy of business. Always take your discounts. Buy low, sell high. If your price, when you make your offer, doesn't meet with the seller's expectations, that's fine. The offer's good. I'm paying cash. And if you don't sell it to somebody else, here's the deal. If you can sell it to somebody else, go ahead and do it. But I don't think I can make a profit on it unless I get it for this price. And then maybe somebody else is smarter than I am, and they can do a better job faster, and they're a better competitor than I am. Number 93, if you miss the business cycle, stay out. Now, there are cycles that go on in business, whether it's chickens or cows or milk or houses or whatever it is. Well, the housing cycle is in depression now. This isn't the time to be buying houses, for crying out loud, unless you've got a buyer, unless you've got some specific reason. Now, I buy and sell all the time, and I'm not telling you I wouldn't buy a house in the morning. But as a general rule, I'm not buying real estate. I'm not hanging on to real estate. I'm selling. I'm liquidating real estate. Have been for years. But again, you know, if I don't sell the real estate today, I haven't lost anything from it. I got real estate that I wished I would have sold in 2005, and I didn't. But I didn't lose anything on it. I still got the real estate. There's a piece of property, I think, that we bought back in the 60s for $200 an acre. My God, the stuff went up to $10,000 an acre, and then it went down to $5. I'm sitting there saying, well, okay. I'm sorry that I missed the $10, but, you know, I still got the $5. No, I'm still ahead of where it was years ago, you know, when I bought it. And if I don't sell it and it goes back down to $200, that's fine. That's fine. All right, now, if you miss the business cycle, stay out. And until the business cycle comes back into the cycle, then you buy back in. Now's not the time to be buying stocks and bonds. Now's the time to be buying gold and silver. Number 94, I pay cash, I don't need a receipt, and I take all of my discounts. And that's a signal to businessmen. Business boys won't pick up on it. Every businessman picks right up on the business signal that says, I pay cash, I don't need a receipt, I take all of my discounts. Now, if that guy is another businessman, he will say, all right, and here's the price. What do you think of that? I think it's a little bit on the high side. Here's my counter offer. What do you think of that? And he'll say, I think that's pretty close right there. Let's load you up. Number 95, honesty is the best policy. You ever heard that? It's kind of trite. Honesty is the best policy. The reason that it is because the first time that you cheat somebody, he's not going to miss that. Do you believe for a minute that you're going to cheat somebody and he's never going to catch on? Now, you might be able to deceive the guy for a week or 10 days or something like that, but the ultimate end of it is he sees what happens and he's disappointed. He's never going to do business with you again. That's a loss. Now, as I said earlier, you're not going to please everybody all the time, but you want to please as many people as you can, as much of the time as you can. which is why it's always good to be right up front. And I like this Bloomberg, you know, this Mayor Bloomberg of New York. He's right up front. He said, here's what I believe. Here's what I practice. That's why I thought I'd come out and I'd just say, hey, here's what I believe. Here's what I practice. And if you disagree with me, why don't you stay away so that you're not disappointed? And that'll save us a lot of grief. I've done business with people in the past, and they were disappointed, and it caused a lot of grief, and we want to see if we can avoid that. So honesty is the best policy. 96, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. It's true. Occasionally, somebody will slip one over on you. I did that one time. I'll tell you a little story here. I had a student come in here one day, and he said, hey, I'd like to buy your schools over here, but I don't have the money. Would you take this car? And I said, yeah, I'll take that car. So he gave me a car title. But when I looked at the car title after I gave him the schools, I noticed that it wasn't for the car. It was for a motorcycle, so I brought it to his attention. Then, after I brought it to his attention, he said, oh, give me back that motorcycle title, and I'll, the next time I come back from Arizona, I will bring you the car title. And I said, well, I'll just keep the motorcycle title. And then when you come back with the car title, I'll exchange titles with you. I've got the car, but I can't register the car without the title. So he says, okay. So some time went by, and one day he says, you know, I'd like to change the deal. I want my car back, and I want to give you back your schools. And I said, well, that's good. And I'm sure that that's a hell of a good deal for you, but I like your car. I don't want to give it back, and I don't want my schools back. I want you to pay me. Give me my title. He never did. And then one day I came home, and my car was gone. Well, now he's got the title to the car, doesn't he? And he can get a new title for his motorcycle. So he stole five schools from me. Now, he thinks in his mind, hey, I slipped it over on this guy, Gordon. But you see, there's a theft statute in the Bible, and the theft statute says you got to pay five times what you steal. And so I said, honesty is the best policy. Fool me once, shame on you. But that guy will never fool me twice because I'll never do business with him again. And that will be to his hurt. Hey, I'm out of time here again, boys and girls. Let me give you a final reminder that you've been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, and that we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact desk, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log schedule and archives. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.